The easier you could make it for somebody to remember what you do, the more likely they were to remember what you do and what a good referral is for you.
Hello and welcome to the Brand New You Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you boost credibility in your career. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today I'm welcoming back to the show David J.P. Fisher, aka D-Fish, president of Rockstar Consulting. David is a speaker, a salesman, a podcaster, an author, and a salsa dancer. In his latest book, Hyper-Connected Selling, David wants to help you win more business through personal influence and human connection by becoming a sales Sherpa. Mr. Fisher, it is my pleasure to welcome you back to the Brand New You Show.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So for those of you who are hearing David for the first time, I encourage you to go back into the archives and listen to our previous show where we talked about your 21st century network, why it probably sucks, and what you can do about it.
Sounds about right. That was a fun conversation.
And since you've been on the show before too, we're also gonna skip the typical question of where you would go on vacation, and we'll let other people go back and figure that out, because I want to dive right into your book.
That's right. Make them work for it.
Yeah. Hyper-Connected Selling. And I got to say first, right off the bat, your book continues to prove to me the importance that the movie The Matrix has had on today's economy.
Right.
And it's not just the economy, but it's just like, you know, if you really go through and you watch that movie, it's like there are so many things that you can take the Matrix to and relate it to challenges and problems that we face on a day-to-day basis that the movie just answers the questions for you perfectly.
Right on. I'm with you. That's actually, you know, why I wrote the book, just so I could drop some Matrix references in there.
All right. Back on point here. Book, Hyper-Connected Selling. So based on the title, one would assume that the book is for salespeople. Is that true, or can the book be expanded beyond those who are in sales?
The answer is yes and yes. So it absolutely is aimed at understanding the selling process in our modern world. And of course, if you've got sales on your business card, that's going to be applicable. But more and more, I believe that we all sell, whether we're a business owner or an entrepreneur, a solo service provider, of course we have to sell our services. But even going into organizations, no matter what you're trying to do, you're always trying to find or create opportunities. You know, whether that's internal to your organization, whether that's external, whether that's finding partnerships. So I really think that everybody can benefit from learning how to be a sales Sherpa, as I say, in the hyper-connected world.
Right. As you know, you've been in sales for a long time. How have you starting back with, let's see if I can remember, not Ginsu knives. I'm probably in trouble for that.
Yeah. No, Cutco. Selling Cutco.
Yeah. That's right. Back in the college days, right?
Yep.
So how have you seen sales, the role of sales evolve over the years since your Cutco days?
Yeah. So the biggest change that has happened, so I started selling Cutco and started my sales career in the late 90s. You know, one little thing came along and did have somewhat of an impact, and that was the internet, right? And that was making information, pretty much all information, available to us 24/7. And I really think that had a huge impact on not just how we sell, but more importantly, on how we buy. And because today's buyer has access to all of the information they could possibly need, being a salesperson was no longer about just having access to that information. And so we've had to redefine and reconfigure what being a good salesperson is. So it's I think, evolved much more from a transactional role where the salesperson had a lot more information than the potential buyer, to really a level playing field where to be a salesperson, you really have to build a relationship, you have to build trust, demonstrate expertise, and then really help your prospective client, your prospective customer make a better, faster, more effective decision in a world full of information overload.
Yeah, I guess before we get too far, I want to go, and I think you're touching on it now, but I want to backtrack just for a second. The book is called Hyper-Connected Selling. So when you say hyper-connected, you know, what is a hyper-connected world that we're in now?
Yeah, a hyper-connected world to me is simply one where we have almost instantaneous access to information and to people. You know, we pull out our smartphone, we can go look up anything on Google, we can connect with hundreds to thousands to millions of other individuals quickly. It's hard to forget that 20 years ago, that wasn't the world we lived in. And so I think we have to really wrap our heads around the fact that we are connected in a way that we never have been before.
You know, so now we have this abundance of information. So it's, as a consumer, we can, I mean, we can look up and figure out stuff on our own. Not that everybody does that, but we can, we have that ability.
Yep.
But 20 years ago, we didn't necessarily have, obviously, that same information, definitely not instantaneous. It would take us a lot longer to figure stuff out. Mm-hmm. But we also had this thing called a gatekeeper back then. Can you tell me a little bit about the old school gatekeepers and how they impacted the sales process?
Sure. Well, it used to be the situation where when you were in sales, what you were working it with a very linear sales process. And you would go from, you know, from step A to step B to step C. And usually going from step A to step B meant getting in front of a prospective client. And that usually meant literally going through a person, you know, the receptionist or, you know, their answering machine, their voicemail, whatever it was. And you had to like learn if you want to be successful in sales to get just to get past that gatekeeper. And it usually was a brute force process, right? I mean, there's this idea of like, hey, I'm just going to make as many calls as I can. It's a numbers game. I'm going to be incredibly persistent. Rejection's not going to stop me. That's where you kind of have the, I guess, the culture of like boiler room, or even going back a little farther, you know, Glengarry, Glen Ross. It's just, you know, effort, 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 hustle, 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 push, push, push. And when we've made this transition into everybody having access all the time to information, it's not that we don't have gatekeepers. It's just that the gatekeeper is rarely just one person somewhere. The gatekeeper often is the fact that we have so much information that's pelting us every day. We run out of attention span. And so not only does the modern salesperson have to, yes, you have to have that hustle. You have to have the drive and motivation, but you also have to put yourself into a position where you can build a relationship with a potential customer before they ever know that they are a potential customer. Mm. Right. So if you want to talk about matrix, like, you know, there is no spoon.
Right.
But, and that's why, you know, one of the things I talk about, and you mentioned this before, being a sales Sherpa, and this is where you and I have talked a lot over the years, this idea of having a brand, really kind of planting a flag and saying, this is what I'm all about. This is my expertise. This is how I help people, using social channels, using digital channels, using offline channels, to make sure people know that, so that when they do go, oh gosh, I need XYZ, Ryan's the first person they think of, and then they reach out and have that conversation. So that's the biggest switch, is our buyers are in control, not the salespeople.
Interesting. Interesting. So you mentioned sales Sherpa a couple of times. So let's go ahead and let's define for those listening today. When you say sales Sherpa, what are you referring to?
Yeah. For me, a sales Sherpa is a person who is a guide that positions themselves in the minds of their sphere of influence as the guide in a specific industry field, or somebody who can solve a specific problem. Right. And the reason I use that metaphor in the book is if somebody is climbing a mountain, everybody knows what the goal is to get to the top of the mountain. There's no surprises. There's no secrets. But the best way to get to the top of the mountain, well, you want to have a map. And ideally, you have somebody who's maybe been up the mountain a couple times before, knows where the pitfalls are, knows where the shortcuts are. That person, that's the sales Sherpa. And what I suggest is, definitely for salespeople, but I think all of us, when building our personal brand, the goal is to position ourselves as that knowledgeable guy, that expert who can take somebody up the mountain.
Yeah, I find that, I mean, that's obviously as a story brand guide, mm-hmm. that really resonates with me. And I think, you know, salespeople have always been a guide of some sort throughout, you know, even go back way back in history, which you actually talk about in the book. But today, because of this hyper-connected world we live in and the availability of information, mm-hmm. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me like the salesperson's role today is really more of helping their customers sift through that information to get to the real problems that they want to solve, because you're always bombarded with all this stuff and it can just become very overwhelming. Whereas maybe in the past, the salesperson really had a kind of a singular focused job, which is I'm going to sell product X and I know everything about X. So if you want to know about product X, you have to come to me.
That's exactly right. I mean, it used to be the salesperson's job was to show up with a brochure, right? Because there was no other place that the prospect could get that information in the brochure. Whereas, you know, now when the salesperson goes in and is engaged with the prospective client, no matter where they are in the process, once information becomes almost a commodity, we make this mistake and think that more information equals better decision making. And that has been proven over and over again to be wrong. In fact, you know, the science shows that the more information somebody has when making a complex decision, like our brains literally shut down and we go, I'm exhausted, and we make worse decisions. So there's an analogy I make, or a metaphor I use in the book, where I'm talking about buying a house, right? And if you're buying a house these days, you now have access through the internet, through the MLS, through Zillow, to tons of information. That doesn't mean that you don't need a real estate agent, because that real estate agent knows the neighborhood, knows the school system, knows the things that aren't on the house description. And they're going to walk you through the process because they do that every day. Whereas we as a home buyer might do it five times in our lives.
Right.
And so that's what we want to do, is really be the person that helps them interpret, make sense of, and really use the overabundance of information to make that better decision. Cause that's not a given thing, right? That more information will make a better decision.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You get brain lock or brain freeze. And at some point you just throw your hands up and go, I just don't know what to do. And I don't know what direction to go in. And it's interesting you bring up the real estate agent or buying the house piece, because I actually I've got an interview with a real estate agent, my old real estate agent, who is branding himself as the live where you play guy. So one of the secret things that he knows is I can get you houses really close to trails, to mountain bike paths, you know, those types of things. Mm. So if you're an outdoor enthusiast and you want to buy a house in the Colorado Front Range, you know, you're going to want to call this guy, because the guy that knows where all those things are. Whereas most real estate agents don't even think about that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that whether you're selling real estate, whether you're selling B2B software, or even, again, maybe you're not a salesperson, maybe you're a business owner, whatever it is, but the more you can say, this is the expertise I have. And it's not just, I'm an expert because I know stuff. I'm an expert because I know stuff and I know what to do with the stuff that I know.
As we're talking about becoming more, you know, more specified or specific in our areas, and you know, this is actually a recurring theme in the last several podcasts I've done, which is basically define what you do and do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you can no longer be everything to everybody anymore, because we have access to this, to such information.
Right.
People look for specialization. I mean, we're, you know, it's a hyper connected world, but it's also becoming a very niche, however you want to say it, world.
Right.
Right. And that you can specialize in something and make a really good living out of it, as long as you define what it is that you're doing and what you're selling, so people know, hey, I go to you for this.
Right. No, that's exactly it. The more I had a mentor who always used to say, if you try to be everything to everybody, you're nothing to no one. Mm-hmm. Right. And this idea of being niche, of being specific in who you help, really what it comes down to is, because not only is there a lot of information, but there's a lot of people. Think about what you see on a LinkedIn newsfeed on a daily basis, or what you could see if you just sat there for a half an hour and scrolling through. You've got hundreds or thousands of connections. There's just way too much. And so what it really also comes down to is just making it easy. I started out writing about networking. One of the things I would say is the easier you could make it for somebody to remember what you do, the more likely they were to remember what you do and what a good, you know, referral is for you. So it's not always necessarily about defining expertise. That's part of it. It's also just being memorable. And, you know, it's a lot easier to remember a real estate agent who, you know, live where you play. I mean, that's a great tagline. Hey, that's really just a little hook in my mind versus having to remember just a real estate agent.
Right, right. Now you mentioned the linear sales process earlier, which is, you know, basically A to B to C to D. It's just, you know, very, yep, very well defined path that people would take years ago from a sales standpoint. Today, mm-hmm, we have this thing that you refer to as the sales matrix.
Right.
Different, obviously. So can you talk to me a little bit, to me a little bit about the sales matrix? And we're not referring to the little green squiggly things that come down in front of you as you look forward.
No, there's no kung fu in the sales matrix. although that would be interesting. What I really was looking at when I tried to make this distinction between the linear sales process and the sales matrix was, again, I came from a very transactional linear based sales background. A lot of sales were like, yeah, you do step one, establish rapport, you know, establish a problem, offer solution, et cetera, et cetera. And that works really well if you're in an environment where there's not a lot of outside influence or outside inputs. And, you know, I think about having a conversation with a prospective client today. Again, they go into their phone and they can use social media to ping their friends and their contacts, get feedback. They can go look at a review. I don't know about you, but anytime I buy something online that I'm not familiar with the company, you just put in the product and review,
sure,
and see what comes up.
Yeah.
And this, especially maybe more in the B2B sales side of things too, is there are so many more decision makers and champions and end users and people that have to, you know, sign off on a PO or whatever it is, that you can't just have a conversation with one person through the whole process. And really what the sales matrix is an understanding that you are now working in an environment where there are a lot of sources of information, lots of sources of influence, and you have to manage that throughout the entire process, right? You know, yes, you're still moving in sales. We're still moving people through a process. We're trying to, you know, get them to an end point. So it's not about just being an unpaid consultant, but we have to acknowledge that. And I said this briefly or quickly earlier, as salespeople like to think they have the control.
Yeah.
And in this environment, we definitely do not. Mm-hmm. Right. And they talk about the buyer's journey these days, right? When they talk, especially in the marketing world, the buyer's journey. Our goal then is to embrace that and walk along with them during that journey and hopefully influence them for the best. But yeah, that's the matrix we have to accept that we're in, that it is complex, it is complicated, it is not always simple. And that doesn't make it bad. That means that we can be of use. So that's, to me, what the sales matrix is.
Buyer's journey, which has obviously, mm-hmm, changed a little bit. But one of the things you espouse in your book, and if, you know, I just compare what you said with the linear process versus the sales matrix now, you know, salespeople were always taught, always be closing.
Right.
Right. Always be closing. ABC, right? Always be closing. I mean, even Michael Scott on The Office knows that, right? Right, right.
Then it's gotta, right? It's gotta be true if Michael Scott
knows. It's gotta be true, right? But in your book, you actually suggest that people, instead of asking for the close, should probably start asking for the next step.
Yep.
What's the difference? I mean, why would I ask for the next step versus just let's close?
Well, and it's slightly semantics, right? But I think it's an important semantical distinction. When we thought about closing, and that, you know, again, old school, I came up in the old school direct sales world, always be closing, the ABCs, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But what it really points us at mentally is an end point. I mean, what do you close? You close, that's the end, you know, you put a bow on it, you move on. And that doesn't work in the sales matrix. So when I talk about the next step, it's really just about recognizing that, again, your job as a salesperson, your job as somebody who influences is to move people forward, but there might be a lot of intermediate steps within that. And in fact, I think even asking for the business, it's simply the next step because there's going to be a relationship after it, right? The closing tips and tricks and the hacks, you know, the fancy ways of trying to ask for business that might have worked in the past, don't anymore, because these days, if you try to pressure somebody into doing something or hoodwink them, either A, they're going to send it back, or B, they're just going to jump on LinkedIn or Twitter or Facebook and go, hey, I just bought something from David. man, I'm so upset that I did that. Like, mm-hmm. what a bad decision. Don't, this product sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good point. The, you know, like social media plays such an important role in today's buying process, not just from a leads or network standpoint, but really through the whole sales matrix.
Mm-hmm. No, that's exactly it. We're not in, because transactional sales are also finite processes, right? There's a beginning, an end, and then we're done, right?
Yeah.
Whereas now it is really about relationships. And also the exciting thing is the people that really figure this out. And when you do have a strong relationship with somebody that happens over time, you have so much trust. You don't try to like sweet talk them. I could call you up and say, hey, Ryan, can you do this? Or Ryan, I think you should do this. Doesn't mean you necessarily will, but you're going to listen to me a lot easier because of the relationship we have. And I think that the great thing about like LinkedIn, for example, is it allows us to have those relationships much longer over time and much bigger networks that we're able to stay in touch with until something happens. We're like, oh, wow, I can serve this person, or hey, this might be a way that we can engage together. So that's, I think, pretty powerful.
Yeah, let's. I want to tie your networking books to the Hyperconnected World books, and you know, you've mentioned social media and LinkedIn a couple of times now. But what roles, like, so if I'm a Sherpa now, I'm a guide. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer, quote, a salesperson, if you will, just going down a linear path.
Right.
What role does networking play now within as a sales Sherpa? How does that work for me now?
Yeah. So how many hours do we have? the very short answer to that is we become a Sherpa when a group of people around us recognize us as the Sherpa.
Okay.
In other words, when our network goes, hey, Ryan is the if you have a question about, you know, story brand, or you have a question about sharing your story online, we need to talk to Ryan. They're intricately linked. And so when you look at something like social media or any digital communication tool, it just becomes another communication tool, another contact vehicle we have to let people know that we are that Sherpa, right? Back in the day, it was like, oh, I'd have to mail a letter to somebody, right? Or maybe I'd give them a call. Now I can still have physical direct mail. I can have phone calls. I can, you know, go to a networking event or a conference and meet with them. I can send an e-newsletter. I can do a LinkedIn post. I can make a video on YouTube. I can make a video on LinkedIn. I can pretty soon make a LinkedIn live video. Tweet, Instagram, internet. All of these things are just little contact vehicles for sharing our expertise and kind of reinforcing that top of mind advertising, right? Just the same reason that Coca-Cola spends millions of dollars advertising a product we all know. All of these just become ways that we as individuals can access our network.
Yeah,
and share that message.
It's interesting because every time we've said the word Sherpa on here today, I have thought of the career Sherpa, Hannah Morgan, mm-hmm. who has also been a guest on this podcast in the past, but she's done a great job of building her personal brand and that positioning. So when you think of someone you need to lead you through career coaching or career guidance, you know, at least for me, you know, Hannah is one of the first people that I think about. So she's doing a very good job, I think, of positioning herself, you know, in the manner that you just mentioned.
Absolutely. And I know this came up in a recent interview you did. I forget who you were talking to, but the idea of, we're talking about sales and being a sales Sherpa, but it does also impact your network no matter what you do. You were sharing a story about being known within your company, right, for your expertise and whether or not you were known and whether or not that had an impact on whether you got a promotion. Even if you work in for an organization, most of your networking is internal. These tools can be used to make sure that the people we do engage with regularly or not as regularly still know what we're up to. You know, I share with clients all the time, it's not about bragging. It's just about realizing that you're in your brain 24/7. Most people aren't. Right. So,
right.
Any which tool is, you have,
which is a godsend, by the way, in my case.
I don't think anybody wants to be in my mind 24/7. That's for sure. I barely do sometimes, but yeah. So the ability to use any of these tools to create that personal brand, absolutely 100% do I think that if you're in sales or selling or influencing any buddy, you need to have that personal brand. But we all do, because again, we're all trying to influence some network, whether that's within our industry, within our field, within our company. And you don't want to like understand you don't have a personal brand when you do get passed over that promotion, or you're the first head to roll for the layoff, something like that.
It's just becoming more and more and more important. And I think, you know, 3 years from now, it's going to be even more important. But like through my wife and her company, she works with a lot of sales reps. Mm-hmm. And sales reps, for some reason, a lot of them, at least the ones I've spoken with, don't feel that they need to have any kind of online presence.
Yep.
And they, you know, and it's true. Some of them are old school. We'll say old school, right? But there's still some new school folks that I'll talk to that think that, you know, having a LinkedIn profile is for somebody else, or having their own website or something is for somebody else. But what's interesting to me about that is that you talk in the book, and we're talking hyper-connected selling, that salespeople should actually want to become a micro-influencer in mm-hmm. their area. Yep. Tell me what you mean when you say micro-influencer, and how does that relate to their personal brand?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people in sales and in many industries resist the idea of social media, and they resist the idea of developing this personal brand because there's a lot of negative connotations around it. It's, you know, the Kardashians or something of that, you know, like that kind of that celebrity level. And whether or not you like the Kardashians, if you do, fantastic, not my cup of tea. But I think a lot of people, they feel it's disingenuous, it's inauthentic. And what I would argue is that to be an influencer, you're not trying to influence millions. In fact, using sales as an example, most salespeople have probably between 200 and 500 people that they're truly trying to influence, right? That are, you know, the prospects, the clients within their area, within their industry. And so when we think about personal brand and we think about using all the tools that we just spoke of, it's not about trying to get 100,000 followers on LinkedIn or on Twitter or anything like that. If you want to, fantastic. And that's, you know, a completely valid way of marketing yourself. But for many professionals, again, finding that number of 500 people, being connected with them, and then just going, I'm going to use LinkedIn, Twitter, an online newsletter, whatever it is, to just make sure that those people know who I am. If you do just that, you're going to be massively successful.
You talk about this this thing that you refer to as social prospecting within your book. Can you tell me a little bit about what social prospecting is and how it ties to how you position yourself online?
Yeah, so we talked about this before, the gatekeeper / gate crasher versus being a sales Sherpa. There's so much information that we can find online, whether it's, you know, on a LinkedIn profile, whether it's the content that our prospects and our network, you know, what they're sharing online. What it is kind of cozying up to your network. And again, not being inauthentic, not being disingenuous about it, but just being there in that space, even before they ever know that they have a problem that you might be able to solve. But, you know, listening in, giving, you know, they talk about giving value. You know, it's really, hey, let me give you some insights, or hey, I know that somebody in my network, you know, had that same problem. Let me connect you to. Hey, let me give you an introduction here. It's the idea of giving value, which is so powerful in the networking space, that then when somebody has a buying signal, somebody says, hey, we're looking to do, you know, you sell software, and you're like, hey, man, our CRM system is just all messed up. Then when you reach out and say, hey, Ryan, I saw that you were talking about CRMs. You know, we actually do some of that work. Is it worth us grabbing a quick phone call? There's no pressure there. There's no, hey, gosh, I hope this person picks up the phone. Hey, I hope they email me back. You know, they're like, yeah, absolutely. Because you've built that relationship. You've built that trust. And I think that's a big part of social prospecting that a lot of salespeople are missing out on.
I'm going to switch gears on you now.
Why not?
I want to talk about your podcast.
Thank you.
Beer Beaten Business. By the way, I highly recommend people go out and pick up a copy of Hyperconnected Selling. It really is an enlightening book, and it's not like a sales book like what most people think of when they think of sales book.
Thank you. I want to put that on the second edition. That'll be the blurb. Ryan Rohn. This isn't a typical sales book.
No. It's not, because most sales books are going to tell you, you know, go close and give you, you know, scripts and things to say, and that's not what you do. Your book is really focused on the world in which we live in today, and frankly, preparing us for the world that we'll live in tomorrow, because it's only going to get more and more hyperconnected.
Exactly.
So just like your podcast, because who doesn't have beer beats and business in a hyperconnected world?
Right.
Okay, I'm trying to make a really bad segue there, but
you tried. I appreciate that.
Tell me about your podcast. I think the last time we spoke, you had either just launched it or were getting ready to. So give me a little bit of insight about Beer Beats in Business.
Yeah. So what's exciting is we're actually, we've done three seasons. We've gotten almost 50 episodes done. Not as crazy prolific as you are, but you are one of my inspirations. And in fact, we are, we're on a little bit of a pause.
We need to dream bigger, my friend.
Well, we're on a little bit of a pause because there's a new addition coming to our family. And so thank you. I did almost none of the work. We're excited then to come back with season four. And really what it is I built my business through networking. I'm obviously biased a bit here, but I think some of the best conversations I've ever had, both as far as just on a personal level, but also gaining professional insights, was sitting, having a cup of coffee with somebody, or having a happy hour beer at the end of the work day. And so I tried to replicate that on our podcast. So I get all kinds of wonderful people, such as yourself. You've been a guest, and we talk about beer, because I'm a huge beer snob, as I know you are.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I might have had a beer or two here and there.
Yeah, right. And music, and we have like really fascinating conversations. You know, the last season that we just finished up, we talked all about kind of the new world of connection. And interestingly enough, all of my guests were either in the tech space and a lot in digital marketing space, or were artists, were actors and writers. And it was actually, I thought this would happen, and it was fun to see that it did happen. That both of those groups, it seems, would be, you know, very disparate. They actually said the exact same things about kind of how this new world of connectivity has influenced what they do, how they do it, where they do their work, the teams they bring around them. So it's been really cool.
All right, tell me about Rockstar Consulting.
Well, you know, Rockstar Consulting is a professional development firm. We've been around for almost 15 years. A lot of the work I do is working as a coach with business owners, salespeople, and solopreneurs. And we've written 8 books on selling, networking, and fun stuff like that, and do a lot of speaking around the country and the world, and right here on this interweb you later. Focus mostly on sales, networking, social media for selling, personal brand, all kinds of good stuff like that.
As you were talking, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, this is an interesting conversation for me personally, not just because it's you and, you know, we've known each other for a long time, but our relationship actually is can be embodied, if you will, within your book, because we met online, we've chatted online many, many times, mm-hmm. but we've never actually met in person. And
right,
which is weird, because even now, as I'm sitting here looking at you on Zoom, I feel like I've known you forever.
Oh yeah.
But we've never actually met.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. And you know what? If we met in person, it'd be fantastic. But we've done a lot of business back and forth over the years. We've been on each other's podcasts. You were in one of my mastermind groups. What I would say, though, is a lot of people are afraid that we're becoming a digital-only world. And I think there's that fear. And that's, I think, why you said some of the old school people are a little worried about technology. But what I really think is happening is that we now have just more options to start this relationship. Yours and I's would have never started without technology. And we will eventually meet offline. We'll share that beer. And what an amazing thing. And we've been able to help each other grow as professionals during that time. And that's why I think a hyper-connected world, as opposed to making us, you know, less connected because of technology, actually, I think, brings a lot to the offline world. And that's the goal.
Yeah. I agree 100%. Mr. Fisher, for those people who are interested in learning more about Rockstar Consulting, beer, beats, and business, or interested in picking up a copy of your book, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So the easiest way is to go right to my website, davidjpfisher.com/podcast/brandnewyou. There's a landing page specifically for everybody who's listening in here today. Got a lot of links to me on LinkedIn and Twitter, linkedin.com/in/imdfish, dfishrockstar on Twitter. And you can buy all of my books right on this little website called Amazon. I think it's got some legs. It'll be around for a while. But they're available in print, ebook, and audio versions. And in fact, later this year, in fact, maybe in the second half of 2019, the second edition of my LinkedIn book is coming out. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Awesome.
Fully updated for 2019.
Awesome. Well, I may have to have you back on. Maybe that's what we can talk about when I come out to see you. And we're on the Beer, Beats, and Business podcast.
I love it. Done. All right, done, man. Done.
Any final thoughts, tips, words of wisdom you'd like to leave with anybody that's listening today?
You know, the thing I'll say is change is difficult. Change is not easy. But the only thing worse than change is being obsolete. So put the work in, put the effort in. You know, being relevant is always going to be employable, but if you're irrelevant, it's going to be hard to get a job.
That is a fact. No truer words have been spoken. David, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. I look forward to speaking with you again, and I look forward to being a guest on your podcast in Chicago.
I love it.
When I come visit.
I love it. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Today's discussion with David reminds me of how important it is for us to be guides. In today's hyper-connected world, we need a lot more guides, not more heroes. As an example, many of my clients reach out to me because they are overwhelmed and don't know how to proceed. They have all of the gadgets, the tools, and access to all the information that they need. Unfortunately, what they don't have is the right message and framework to pull it all together. And it's your message and framework where your potential clients will see you as a guide who can help them overcome the obstacles they face. The same is true for today's salesperson. Potential clients who used to go to a salesperson for information now have so much information available to them that they find it difficult to decide what to do. This is where today's sales Sherpa and guide comes into play in our hyper-connected world. Guides exist to help people sift through all of the information that's available to them so that they can make informed decisions and start to move in the right direction. This is why it's critical, whether you're a personal brand or you are responsible for a business brand, for you to determine what it is you want to become known for. That way you can position yourself as a guide or a Sherpa. Casting a wide net with your brand will only serve to diminish your value, causing you to eventually become known for nothing. When that happens, you won't stand out, and your clients won't know how what you offer will benefit them. At some point in our personal buying decisions, we all reach out for knowledge and guidance to help us make the right decisions. That knowledge today comes from various sources, such as social media posts, blog posts, ratings, reviews, friends, neighbors, etc. However, it's not the amount of information, knowledge, tools, or gadgets that we collect that matters. In fact, as David said, science has proven that the more stuff we have available to us, the more difficult our buying decisions become. What matters more than information, tools, or gadgets is becoming known for knowing something. In other words, becoming a specialist, becoming a guide. So when people look for information about you or a specific problem they are facing, you're the person who shows up as the one who can guide them to a solution. David, my friend, thank you for being a guest on the show today and for sharing your hyper-connected world with us. I look forward to the day when we can talk beer, beats, and business in person and on location. Thank you for tuning in today. For those of you who've been listening for a while, I'd love to know what you think of the new music for the podcast. Send me a tweet at Ryan Roten, use the hashtag CareerCred, and let me know your thoughts. And until next week, I've been Ryan, and I'm out. Today's show is edited and produced by Ryan Roten. And today's music is called Hudson Talk by Neon Beach. The music license for today's show was purchased via SoundStripe.com.